This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Medical marijuana is coming to Massachusetts. Voters overwhelmingly approved it a year ago. And although it's still not for sale legally, it will be soon, probably in a city, town, or neighborhood near you.
The law calls for as many as 35 dispensaries across the state. And this week, in the first phase of the process, the state public health department approved most of the applications. It approved 158 out of 181. But there are many more regulatory hurdles ahead. That's because communities across the state have been passing a flurry of ordinances and moratoriums aimed at slowing down the marijuana industry's march.
That's the case even in places like Cambridge and Brookline, where large majorities supported medical marijuana. Joining me now to talk more about the state of medical marijuana in Massachusetts is Andy Metzger. He's a reporter with State House News Service and wrote a comprehensive county-by-county analysis on this topic. You can find that at radioboston.org. And Andy, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
So in your piece, you talked about how towns and cities have been responding to the new laws. Tell us what you found.
Well, one of the unique things about Massachusetts is there's 351 cities and towns, so you have 351 zoning boards and town meetings or city councils, and about a third of them have voted to enact a moratorium, which is temporary, but slows down when a dispensary could locate.
So moratoriums, of course, they can't do permanent moratoriums because that would be against the law, which is makes medical marijuana legal. But why the temporary moratoriums? What are the concerns of these municipal officials?
Well, by and large, I think everyone told me that they wanted time to enact a new zoning ordinance or zoning bylaw. And so a year or so would be about all the time they need to do that. I think that's one of the only reasons that the Attorney General allows towns at least to enact a moratorium.
I see. So give us a sense of what the Public Health Department did yesterday. This is about 1 year since voters approved medical marijuana in the state. Tell us what happened yesterday and where we are in this process.
Well, yesterday, 158 applicants for the up to 35 medical marijuana dispensaries, the licenses, 158 of them moved a little bit closer to maybe being one of the lucky few. They cleared the financial and background check portion of the application process.
I see. So that means they're financially in a position to do this. So what's the next step, and when will we see the first dispensaries opening up in Massachusetts?
Well, now we start moving into phase two, and I believe there will be a meeting on that on October 10th for the dispensary applicants. And that'll be a little bit more fun for people who are interested in the local angle to this, because during the phase two process, you'll start to get more specific about where a dispensary actually wants to locate. Right now, it's just countywide.
Sure. And any sense of when the first dispensary is likely to open?
I don't. I've heard from the backers of the medical marijuana law. I believe they said one could be licensed as soon as January, but I haven't heard anything from the Department of Public Health, which is handling that.
All right. That's Andy Metzger. He's a reporter for State House News. You can find his analysis of the medical marijuana law issue at our website, radioboston.org. Andy, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And joining me now is Martin Lee. He's author of Smoke Signals, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific. He's in Boston for a few days. And Martin Lee, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me.
And listeners, we want to get you to chime in on this conversation. We're talking about medical marijuana. Are you a patient waiting to buy medical marijuana? Are you worried about a pot dispensary opening next door to you? How should your town move forward on this? We'd love to hear from you. Any questions you have, you can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Martin Lee, I'm really interested in talking to you because I wanted to get sort of a broader context of what Massachusetts is going through. How does the way this state is implementing legalization of medical marijuana compare with other states?
Well, compared to California, for example, which is where I'm from, the rules are much stricter. There is a more serious regulatory apparatus being implemented. In California, the state and local officials basically dropped the ball. They were supposed to, according to the law that was passed in 1996, Proposition 215, which legalized marijuana for therapeutic use in California. It urged the state to implement a viable distribution system for that herb, and that was never done. Instead, there was a patchwork quilt of laws that differed from county to county, so it was very confusing. I don't think we're going to see that in Massachusetts. They're taking a much more sober approach, if you will, and I think it will be a more successful project as a result.
And what do you think? You know, we were just talking there to Andy Metzger, and he talked about 115 different municipalities that have passed temporary moratoriums. Make sense of that for us, because it seems like on the one hand, we're sort of seeing a pretty overwhelming voter approval on this issue. But then as you go sort of municipality by municipality, there seems to be almost caution, even pushback.
We were in the midst of a significant cultural shift across the country, not just in Massachusetts, with respect to cannabis. And typically, when there's a cultural change, the politics lags behind. It takes a few years to catch up. And that's, I think, what's happening with respect to cannabis. For 75 years since Prohibition was enacted in 1937, which is for all extent and purposes banned marijuana in the United States, there's been a lot of misinformation that has exaggerated the dangers of the drug. And that sticks. You know, people have heard so many negative things about marijuana. We're still hearing it from the federal government. You know, the official position today still is that marijuana is a dangerous drug with no medical value. And that's tantamount to saying the moon is made of green cheese, really. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, people are hearing that it's addictive, it's toxic to the brain, it lowers one's IQ. This is still the kind of information that people are accessing on a regular basis, because it's what the federal government is promoting. And I think as a result, it's kind of a cautious attitude, a kind of wait and see, let's go slow, because you're getting conflicting signals, mixed signals, and it makes for confusion as a result.
Well, Massachusetts, 20 states now have approved medical marijuana, including the District of Columbia. I'm curious, so sort of what's the most instructive set of lessons that a state that's new to this brave new world, what's the lesson there? What should Massachusetts be taking on board?
Well, let's go back and look at the California example. Since it's been enacted first in California, these laws, it really set the stage for much of what has followed. California has not slid into the ocean. The sky has not fallen. And when you step back away from all the propaganda, pro and con, about around this controversial issue, and just take a deep breath and look at what's gone on, you see no deaths that have arisen because of one million people have been approved for medical use in California. You don't see a pattern of abuse. You don't see a pattern of harm resulting. It's not like, for example, with pharmaceuticals like Vioxx that are released and 70,000 people die of heart attack. You don't see a pattern of harm. And I think we're likely to see a similar pattern in Washington and Colorado, which last year legalized across the board for adult use. It's a relatively safe substance. There could be problems with it, but a lot of the problems stem from the legal system and the disjuncture between the experience people have with it and what we hear from the federal government, which tends to discredit itself when it takes such a strange position or clings to it, this idea that it's dangerous and it has no therapeutic value.
I want to talk about the broader sort of federal context in a moment, but first I want to bring in a local voice from the sort of greater Boston world, Betsy DeWitt. She's chairman of the Brookline Board of Selectmen. And Betsy DeWitt, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Happy to be there.
Really happy to talk to you, because we're sort of talking about people like you who are sort of on the front lines of implementing this new law. And we noted that more than 75% of Brookline voters approved the medical marijuana ballot question. And yet you're one of the municipalities with a temporary moratorium in place against it. Why is that? What are the concerns? What are the questions that you as a municipal leader need to answer before you sort of clear the way for this to go forward?
Well, I think we believe that medically supervised use of marijuana is like a prescription, and frankly, because of what you've just been hearing, it's also a controlled substance. So what we think is that medical marijuana dispensaries are going to be places like places that sell alcohol or tobacco, we need to have proper safeguards. We municipalities regulate the sale of alcohol under the State Alcoholic Beverage Commission. We also, as a municipality, this town, Brookline, was one of the first to prohibit cigarette smoke in public places, and we also regulate where tobacco can be sold. So we are, I would say, prudent. I think we believe in reasonable safeguards, and to illustrate that, we first passed a moratorium, really because we wanted to see what the Department of Public Health regulations would be in order for us to think about how we would pursue that locally. We have three warrant articles. This is legislation coming before our town meeting in November. One is a bylaw that will establish a framework under the now established DPH's regs, and we'll treat this as a local licensing matter with annual inspections of dispensaries, and that's what we do for liquor licenses. So we're using a liquor licensing framework as our model.
Mm-hmm.
We will also require a fingerprinting and criminal record check, but we do that for license holders anyway. And by the way, ice cream truck vendors are required by state law to have their fingerprints
mm-hmm.
checked. So, I mean, we're not treating these differently from
sure.
other regulated activities. And then finally, yes, we too have zoning. It limits the locations to business or commercial districts. And interestingly, contrary to federal regulations, we've said within 500 feet of a school, and that's basically because we're a built-out community, and inside a business or commercial district, you might not find a site 1,000 feet away from either a public or a private school, and I don't know whether that will be challenged or not, because I do know the feds have disputed some local regulations.
I see. Betsy DeWitt, I'm curious to know, I mean, the way the law is written, do you have the guidance that you need to do what you need to do as a municipality in terms of licensing these dispensaries? Do you feel you have all the guidance that you need?
All? Some. How's about that? we believe that the state of Massachusetts, and I know we have approached this very differently from California and quite differently, frankly, from Colorado, believes that medical marijuana is a legitimate, or medical reasons are a legitimate use of marijuana. And I think we're trying in a sort of reasonable approach to implement a good oversight framework. Personally, I have some concerns. I don't like the idea of stoner slang being used. I don't think these are going to be candy stores.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a purpose that is health-related. And from a municipal perspective, our concerns are all about public health and public safety. So I would say, to the extent that we get good guidance from the state, and then our director of health, of public health, has been very, very intimately involved in interviewing potential dispensary operators. We feel that there are probably people out there whom we can work with, and who will work within the both Commonwealth framework and also whatever local regulations are implemented. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but you know, we've never done this before.
Sure, yeah, it's a brand new world. Betsy DeWitt, Chairwoman of the Brookline Board of Selectmen, stay with us, because I think your perspective, especially from the sort of ground level there, is going to be really valuable to us as we move forward with this conversation. Martin Lee, I'm just curious what strikes you listening to Betsy DeWitt there, who seems to me to be talking about this in a very serious, thoughtful sort of way from the perspective of a local municipal official.
When you consider the research that's been done on the public health impacts of marijuana, it's quite striking and not well known. But there's been surveys comparing marijuana smokers to non-marijuana smokers. People can also administer in other ways, but let's say marijuana users. And what's been found is that among marijuana users, less incidence of Alzheimer's than non-users, less incidence of diabetes, less incidence of metabolic syndrome, less use of pharmaceutical painkillers, less alcoholism. So overall, I don't think we're heading into any kind of public health crisis, particularly when you have a well-regulated regime. I think this is a transitional period, and maybe 10, 15 years from now, we'll look back upon this and wonder what was all the fuss about. And may end it like that.
Well, listeners, we want to hear from you. We'd love to get your perspective on this. If you're in a town or a municipality that could have, might have a marijuana dispensary, what do you make of that? Are you worried about a pot dispensary opening next door or not? How should your town move forward with this new law? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And let's take a couple of calls now. Susan is calling from Milton. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling because I was wondering about the Board of Selectmen woman from Brookline mentioned comparing sort of the dispensaries to a liquor store and the kind of licensing that would be needed. But my understanding is that the people who would be going to these dispensaries would require a prescription, making the dispensaries more like a CVS than a liquor store. So I guess I'm kind of wondering, you know, where, why is there this disconnect?
Susan, thanks for that call. Betsy DeWitt, do you want to respond to Susan's question there?
Well, I would say actually, because I was talking about the municipal authority to license, and that's what we can do. We don't license pharmacies. But I would also agree that it is like a prescription. And to the extent that the dispensaries have to be have good regulation and oversight, it's coming from the State Department of Public Health, who are establishing, let's say, the conditions under which one of these dispensaries can be set up. We as municipalities are not authorized to do public health regulation other than to have an annual inspection and make sure that they're doing what they've agreed to do. It's the state that has that authority. And it's like in prescriptions, it's where the Federal Drug Administration is the agency that has authority over prescriptions. So municipalities just don't have that authority. That's the difference.
I see. Susan, thanks so much for that call. Let's go to Charlie, who's calling from Holliston. Hi, Charlie. You're on the air.
Hi there. My only concern with this, I was all in favor of it for the longest time, and I might be a beneficiary. I have Parkinson's, and they tell me it helps with that. But my son, who, much to my chagrin, smoked a lot of marijuana in college, was hospitalized several times for something called cannabinoid hyperemesis, which I guess is something that's just coming into the medical people's attention now, which is a cyclic vomiting syndrome. And he's been hospitalized three times for this. And finally, when they explained to us what it was, he no longer smokes marijuana. But I just hope there are plenty of controls on this.
Right. So you're interested, you're concerned about young people having too easy access to it. Thanks, Charlie. Let me go to you, Martin Lee, about Charlie's concern.
Well, the condition that was just described is a real condition. It's very unusual and rare, but it does exist.
And say it again. What's it called?
It's a hypermesis. Unlike most people's experience with marijuana, which tends to ameliorate nausea, there are some situations where it exacerbates it and could cause vomiting. And it's because marijuana scientifically or medically works as a biphasic drug, meaning a small amount of it will have a certain effect, and that tends to be an anti-nausea effect in this example, but a large amount can have just the opposite effect. And this phenomena, the biphasic phenomena, is something that's not uncommon to many different drugs. You look at something like snake venom, it's small amounts. It could be a very powerful medicine. Large amounts, it kills you. So really, it's a matter of dosage as part of it, and also a particular person's condition and temperament. And different people have different congenital sensitivities with respect to marijuana and react in different ways. It tends to be something that will ameliorate nausea, but in unusual and rare cases, it can be just what the caller described, and we should be aware of that.
And Betsy DeWitt, let me get you to respond to the caller's sort of broader concern. I mean, I think he summed it up best when he said he has Parkinson's. It might be good for him. He's concerned, though, about his son. So just not sure what local municipal leaders and ordinances can do to sort of respond to concerns like that.
Well, I will start by saying medically supervised use is how we anticipate this will be. And it's odd that we're sort of talking back and forth between it's like a prescription. It is a prescription.
Right.
compared to how we're, as a municipality, able to implement regulation. And I guess my feeling about that is that we also, in our own public health department, are looking at what safeguards should be in place. We will have local oversight. If there are examples of, let's call it, misuse, and they are reported to us, then we can, through our Department of Public Health and also through the state, have sanctions. So I can imagine that there are going to be some questions raised about how folks obtain their marijuana, if they have legitimately obtained it through a prescription, and then somehow it gets misused. That's going to go into a combination of public safety, which is to say our police department, or through other ways of regulating through the state. But the assumption here is that, and as we have agreed, this is something new, we're all going to learn as we go, but certainly there will be a public safety interest in it, which means the police department with equal interest as the health concerns.
Sure. Well, speaking of it being something new, I want to ask you both about this sort of development this summer, which sort of puts this conversation to the broader federal perspective. As we know, marijuana is still illegal according to federal law. It's still categorized as more harmful than cocaine by the feds. But here we have the Obama Justice Department this summer signaling that it's going to leave the responsibility of regulating individual pot use to the states. Martin Lee, what's the significance of that, first of all?
Well, the Justice Department guidelines that were issued late in August were couched in terminology that really makes it possible for the Obama administration in the future or subsequent administration to pretty much pursue any policy they want within the framework that was laid out in those guidelines. You know, there are certain caveats, stipulations that were a part of this memo. And among them, that there should not be any marijuana diverted from Washington and Colorado to other states, that it has to stay out of
Washington and Colorado, the two states that legalized recreational use.
And this is what prompted the memo. And also that it shouldn't fall into the hands of young people. And we have to face the facts here. You know, it will fall into the hands of young people. And the average age of a young person in the United States trying marijuana for the first time is 14 years and 10 months. And no matter what regulations are enacted in Massachusetts or any other state, that will continue. Those are just the facts, for good or ill. Also, there will be diversion to other states. It's the law of supply and demand, if a person can make money. So the idea that these states have to prevent that in order to receive the blessings, the continued blessing of the federal government, you know, that's dicey. Now, it may well be that what we're going through here is really a turning point. We can look back upon this, and this is when things really change with respect to federal policy. Or it may be just a bump in the road.
Well, did they really change? And Betsy DeWitt, I'd love to come to you on this, and I'm not sure if the Brookline Board of Selectmen talk about this, think about this, but again, when it comes to federal policy, you have a sort of signal from the Justice Department that they're going to leave enforcement to local jurisdictions, but the federal law hasn't really changed. So what might this do down the road if, say, a new administration comes in to Washington and says, well, no, in fact, we're going to enforce federal law? And then aren't you guys in Brookline you know, facing a difficult situation there?
Our assumption here is that if we abide by what the state has set up as the regulatory framework, that we are trusting that gives us protection. But you're right, there are lots of uncertainties about this. I guess I'm going to look at it from the perspective of the change after prohibition. Before prohibition, there was lots of illegal creation of, sales of, dispensing of alcohol, and a lot of it was not very safe to consume. If this regulatory framework sets standards of safety, and I understand that marijuana is less harmful than some other things we take or consume, but even that, I'm hoping that this regulatory framework will perhaps create the same sort of change that happened under Prohibition and there will become better documentation over its health consequences, whether they're good or bad. And if it's clear that the health consequences are favorable and the misuse is minimized, then that would be a favorable result. May not be the way it turns out, but mm-hmm. that's certainly what could happen.
Let's try to get at least one or two more calls into this conversation. Brendan is calling from Weymouth. Hi, Brendan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, with the broadening acceptance of marijuana across the country, a lot of our younger folks are teenagers, 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. They have a different attitude about marijuana. They have a very accepting attitude. They say it's not bad, it's okay, it's not illegal anymore. And what I've seen with two of my nephews is they end up not being able to get jobs because of drug testing. And I'm wondering what's being done to kind of address that, because I think it's going to be a bigger and bigger issue as we move forward.
Interesting question, Brendan. Martin Lee, why don't you respond to Brendan?
It's interesting, again, because we are in the midst of a cultural transition. And marijuana is a kind of a Janus-faced, a double-faced herb. You know, it is used recreationally, and it is used medicinally. And that's been for many, many years throughout history, actually. And because of that, you have kind of two sets of criteria that we're dealing with. I think, unfortunately, the legal framework has not adequately responded to that reality of that double-faced nature of the plant. Eventually, it will have to come around. You know, I think one of the benefits of legalization, if indeed it is implemented across the board in the future, you won't have 750,000 people arrested each mm-hmm. year for marijuana. You won't have drug testing for marijuana. You won't have impediments to important medical research that has been thwarted as a result of prohibition. And when these changes are implemented and things open up a bit, we will have a new set of criteria to judge this whole phenomenon.
Mm. And, of course, with more towns, possibly Brookline among them, there's going to be a bigger and bigger sort of reservoir of data from which to draw. And Betsy DeWitt, are you expecting that one of these dispensaries is coming to your town of Brookline?
What can I say? I can say that we have been identified as a very desirable location, and therefore it is my expectation that it's a pretty good chance that there will be one in Brookline. Beyond that, we'll have to wait and see when the sites are finally allocated. But I would like to follow up on the other comment, and that is I do believe medical research, I do believe gathering more data will help us understand, as opposed to our response to information that may or may not be accurate and certainly is not well tested. It seems to me what could come out of this is a much better understanding of the impact of the use for medical purposes. And just as sort of a footnote here, it might turn out, even though I know it's federal level regulation, that people who are being tested for drugs could produce a prescription and have a healthcare provider give an explanation for why that individual has been using marijuana, and maybe that would introduce another, let's call it, a variable in mm-hmm. the whole situation.
Martin Lee, we literally have 5 seconds left, but I wanted to give you the last word here.
You know, there has been a tremendous amount of preclinical scientific research, and it's opened up whole new vistas of understanding human biology and physiology mm-hmm. with tremendous implications for many areas of medical science.
Well, that's Martin Lee. He's author of Smoke Signals, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific. Martin Lee, thanks so much for coming in and helping us with this conversation.
Thank you.
It's an important one. And Betsy DeWitt, chairwoman of the Brookline Board of Selectmen. Betsy DeWitt, what a pleasure talking to you, and good luck as you struggle with this new world out there. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And listeners, this conversation continues on RadioBoston.org and on Facebook, where Melinda Fayette writes, "I'll take a dispensary over a casino. Can we pick?" Stay with us. Coming up, Only a Game's Bill Littlefield joins us to talk sports. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.